Chapter 7. If you'd like to see a map of Eddie Street and what he's explored of The Gloom, you can find it in my Facebook group. Search for Fans of Logan Jacobs in Facebook groups or on my Patreon. Search Google for Patreon plus Logan Jacobs. As night fell, I checked over my backpack and looked over the rifle and my pistol one last time to make sure I had everything in order. On a whim, I threw a sketchbook into the backpack, along with a couple of my nice art pencils, so I could make some sketches of the strange wonders in The Gloom. Ipseth watched me with her arms wrapped around herself, and her brow knitted together with concern. I knew she wasn't happy to see me going back into The Gloom, but I was confident I'd be able to handle anything I encountered with my superior firepower. "All right," I said, as I put on my backpack and slung the rifle over my shoulder. "I'll be back before sunrise." I was dressed in my blue camo, which I hoped would work in the strange blue light of the glowing mushroom that lit the underground world. The high point pistol was secured to my belt in its holster, and I was ready to leave. Ipseth wordlessly walked up to me, raised her delicate hand, and took hold of either side of my face to pull me to her. The elven woman's soft lips met mine as we kissed for the first time, and something deep within me stirred as I placed my hands on her small waist. The kiss remained chaste and close-mouthed, but I could feel Ipseth's passion in the way her fingers trembled along my jaw.
"Come back safe to me, Eddie Hill,"
she breathed as she pulled back a moment later.
I don't know what I would do without you."
I looked deep into the blue-skinned woman's eyes and almost didn't want to leave, but something was pulling me to The Gloom, and I knew I had to go. "I will," I promised. "Nothing could keep me from coming back to you." Ipseth walked me to the back door, and with one look back at the gorgeous woman, I closed the door and locked it behind me. I took a look around to make sure Mrs. Whitmire wasn't spying over the fence or through the lacy curtains of her windows, and then I headed into the lilac bushes, where the entrance of the tunnels were. The tunnels below felt more familiar this time as I clicked on my flashlight, and I made my way to the iron door past the cave where the skeleton of the Nictor moldered silently. There were butterflies in my stomach as I put the large key into the door, and I felt a sense of excitement and adventure as I prepared to explore the subterranean world. The twisted forest was the same as I had left it, and I carefully picked my way through the undergrowth while trying to be as quiet as I could. I tried to keep an eye out for Nictors that might be flying above, but the canopy of purple leaves would give me some cover. I was also watching for signs of the small, rat-like people I'd encountered the last time I had come through this area. Ipseth had said they were called brownies, and it wasn't long before I saw the rustle of a bush and noted a group of them as they gathered berries. I opened my pack and took out the bag of dried fruit, and then I slowly approached the tiny workers as they picked berries from a bush and passed them down a line they had formed, which ended with a brownie placing the goods into a little cart of sorts. When the little creatures saw me, most of them scattered, except for a slightly bigger one that had a bow and a pack of their needle-like arrows. The little guy puffed up his chest and put an arrow to his bow, but I crouched down a few feet away from him and showed the tiny archer the bag of fruit. Then I made a show of eating a dried apricot before I offered the brownie one. The small archer's animal-like face made it hard to read his expression, but he didn't point his arrow at me as his round ears and whiskers twitched. The brownie took a step closer while still holding his bow, and I could see others waiting in the undergrowth as they watched. The archer sniffed the air, but didn't come any closer. I put the apricot back in the bag and set the whole thing on the ground between us, and I saw the brownie's eyes narrow as he watched me. Then he took a few steps closer to sniff the bag.
"It's for you," I said quietly, since I was fairly sure the creature's sharp ears would hear me.
I wasn't sure if the brownies could understand me, but I felt they would be able to read my tone and posture. I nudged the bag a little closer to the archer, and the little guy walked up to it while keeping his beady black eyes on me. Then the brownie put his arrow back in the pack on his back and reached a small hand into the bag to pick up a dried chunk of date before he took a test nibble. The archer finished the piece of date while he looked at me, and then he made a series of squeaking sounds. The rest of the brownies came out of their hiding places and surrounded the bag, and they started taking the dried fruit back to their cart, or placing them in little bags they carried. I wanted, more than anything, to take out my sketchbook and make some simple sketches of the creatures, but I was worried the movement would scare them off. I tried to note the details of their clothes and their anatomy so I could draw them later. The archer, who seemed to be the leader of the group, had a scar that ran down his face and across his eye, but the other brownies seemed too similar to distinguish from one another. Once they'd emptied the bag, the others went to the cart and began to wheel it away. The archer stayed and offered me an elaborate bow, so I inclined my head in return. Then he pulled a small button, about the size of a dime, from a bag on his side and lifted it toward me.
"Thank you."
I slowly reached out and took the offered button, and then the archer nodded at me and went to join the workers. I turned the silver button over in my hand to get a better look at it. Around the edges of both sides there were little intentional scratches I assumed had some meaning to the brownies, maybe some kind of writing, and I smiled before I put the button in my pocket for safekeeping and started south. I made my way through the twisted forest, and I passed more and more clumps of the large, glowing mushrooms as I picked my way around the trees and underbrush. At the edge of the subterranean wood, there was an incredible underground lake, fed by a waterfall surrounded by a hanging moss, and I stopped there to rest and eat a little jerky. I made a sketch of the scarred leader of the brownies while I enjoyed the view, and then I continued on. The gloom was filled with unexpected beauty. Beyond the waterfall was a forest of mushrooms that grew even larger than they did in the previous forest or the tunnels I'd seen. The largest ones stood well above my head, and their bright blue light filled up that portion of the caverns. As the mushroom forest thinned, I came out into a darker cavern where the mushrooms were more sparse, so I had to pause while my eyes adjusted to the dark. In this area, the caverns were far more treacherous than the forest had been. The ground was uneven, with sharp drop-offs, narrow ledges, and outcroppings of stone. I picked my way through the cavern, and I listened for echoes that would indicate I wasn't alone. I wasn't sure how much further it was to the region where the bandits Ipseth told me about. But then I started to hear voices. The echoes of the cave muddled the words, and I couldn't understand what was being said at first, but as I kept moving forward, I began to smell cooking meat and was able to follow the scent. Then, over the edge of one of the ledges, I saw the glow of a fire and crept closer as the voices became clear. The speakers had deep, guttural voices, but they were speaking English, and I wondered again if it was some magic of the gloom that translated the language for me.
You're going to burn it,
came a growl from beneath the ledge I was on.
It's going to be tough enough without you drying it out.
Got to cook it up proper,
another grunting voice replied.
It looked poorly, and I'm not getting the shits from bad meat.
I carefully peered down over the ledge, and what I saw churned my stomach. There were three huge, green-skinned brutes gathered around a fire in a makeshift campsite, and they had wide faces, dull eyes, and yellowed tusks curving up from their bottom lips. There were two ramshackle tents behind them, too. One was bigger than the other,
but they just looked like big pieces of rotting canvas held up on poles and loosely tied together. But what sickened me was what they were turning on a spit over the fire. It was impossible to tell who it had been, but the humanoid shape turning over the fire was small, like a child. The face and skin had shriveled from the flames, but it was definitely a person the monsters below were cooking up and arguing over. And I suppressed a retch so the monsters below didn't hear me.
"Still, it was a nice little raid,"
a third voice rumbled.
"Got some bits and baubles, and we each got a go on that gnome slut."
Can't beat a gnome cunt for tightness,"
one of the others agreed.
"But by the time I got a chance, the bitch's pussy was all tore open from YouTube's pricks."
"Yes,"
one of them laughed.
"You heard her scream when I slammed into her. My tool came up to her chest, but I think it was Gaz who made her all broken."
"I did not,"
one of the other monsters groaned.
"You did! I saw the blood on your prick when you finished pumping her."
I pulled back from the ledge and tried to block out the monster's horrible conversation so I could come up with a plan. Whatever these things were, it was clear they were complete pieces of shit, and the gloom would be a better place without them. If I caught them off guard, I could probably put all three down before they knew what had happened.
"Could have been worse,"
one of the green-skinned monsters below said.
"Put a little gold in our coffers, got a decent lay, and some supper. Those farmers didn't put up much of a fight."
If we could find that missing elf princess, we could make a good bit of gold,"
one of the other monsters grunted as I moved away from the ledge to quietly unzip my pack and get out my noise-suppressing headphones.
"But then, Ruck here would probably try to fuck her and drive down the reward."
The three monsters laughed loudly, and I paused. A missing princess? Were they talking about Ibseth?
We'd have to deal with that elf psychopath, Ursinger, then,"
one of the trio grumbled.
"He'd probably just have a shot on sight, so he wouldn't have to pay."
"I don't know, Gaz,"
the last brute replied.
"Ursinger raised up the Nictors. Maybe he'd find us useful. Imagine us, generals in the Night King's army, as he takes over the gloom in a conquest of domination. We'd get to kill and fuck night elves as he took from the other tribes."
That would never happen,"
the one named Gaz shot back.
"Orcs is orcs, and we don't serve night elf pricks like Ursinger."
Orcs. That's what the monsters below me were. I carefully pulled out my ear protection and placed them on my head. I didn't have enough money to buy the electric ones, so these headphones blocked out almost all the sound of the orcs' conversation, and I knew I would have to be extra careful as I approached the ledge again. It was possible I could dislodge a pebble that would alert them to my presence, and I wouldn't be able to hear it, so I would have to pay attention to where I set my feet. The trick would be putting them down as quickly as I could, so I wouldn't have to physically fight any of the huge brutes. I stood to a half-crouch and slowly moved up to the ledge, and then I looked over and saw the three orcs laughing as one reached up to the figure turning on the spit, ripped off one of its arms, and began to eat. It was now or never. So I pulled my AK around in front of me, flipped off the safety, took aim, and inhaled sharply. Then I exhaled and squeezed the trigger, and a bullet rocketed toward the orc who had begun to eat. The projectile slammed into the orc's skull and exited with a spray of blood, and the other two stopped laughing as they watched their companion fall dead to the ground. Then they looked up at where I stood on the ledge over them.
Get him!
The orcs jumped up to run, but another two came rushing out of the tents, and one of the new orcs already had a bow drawn. Well, shit. At least I had a semi-automatic rifle. I squeezed the trigger again and shot down one of the running orcs. Ruck, I assumed, and he too fell with his back a bloody mess of torn flesh. Then I ducked down as an arrow zoomed over my head. The arrow was followed by a rock about the size of my head, thrown by one of the orcs, which crashed against the cavern wall and shattered into a dozen pieces. Holy fuck, they were strong. I could hear their muffled shouts to one another through my headphones, but I couldn't understand anything they were saying. But from the tone of their voices, I could tell they weren't happy. I popped back up over the ledge and shot at the orc with the bow, who fell backwards as several bullets slammed into his chest in rapid succession. The other orc, who'd come out of the tents, threw another large rock at me, and I had to duck down again. But I hadn't seen the third orc who'd been next to the fire, and I wondered where he'd gone. As I came back up to shoot at the orc who was throwing rocks, the brute tried to dive out of the way, but he wasn't fast enough. Bullets ripped through his body in a spray of blood, and when he hit the ground, he too was dead. Then I peeked back over the ledge to see where the last of the orcs had gone, but he was nowhere in sight. Had he run off? I stood, took off my headphones, and looked around, but then a guttural howl and the sight of movement to my left made me turn my head. The final orc climbed up onto the wide ledge where I stood and was running, full tilt at me. I started to raise my AK, but before I could get a shot off, the brute tackled me to the ground, and we both almost sailed over the edge of the overhang. Fuck! My rifle was knocked out of my hand, and it skittered across the floor out of reach. Before I could react, the huge orc straddled me and began to pummel me with his fists. I had to put my arms up to protect my face and tried to think through the pain of his blows of a way to get the beast off me before he cracked my ribs. Luckily, I was tall and lanky, so I brought my legs up and then back down as I arched my back to try and dislodge the asshole. But the big guy was heavy as fuck, and I only managed to move him enough to reposition my body beneath him. The good news was that he had to stop pummeling me long enough to right himself, and I was able to work my hand between his huge thigh and my side, where I had the pistol on my belt. As the orc raised both of his massive fists over his head to deliver a powerful blow, I pulled my pistol and fired it point blank into his chest several times, and the monster fell back with a slack look of surprise on his brutish face. The sound of the pistol going off made my ears ring as it echoed endlessly through the caverns, and I pushed the ugly fucker off me and then tried to catch my breath. My chest was screaming with each breath I took, but I gingerly felt my rib cage. I didn't think anything had been broken. Eddie Hill 5, Gloom Assholes 0, I grunted as I slowly stood, picked up my rifle and pack, and started to make my way down to the camp, despite the protest of my bruised chest and arms. From the look of the filthy camp, the orcs had been here for a while. Bones with bits of rotting meat clinging to them and a few broken ceramic jugs littered the ground. So I started by searching the bodies and found a few fistfuls of gold and silver coins in their pockets. On one of the bodies, I suspected it was Gaz, I found a small iron key on a chain around his neck, so I took that too. What weapons they carried on them were pitted with rust, so I didn't bother with them, since they'd be a lot to carry back anyway. Then I searched the tents and found a few more gold coins in one of the packs, as well as some plain gold bangles. But in the other, larger tent, there was a small locked chest. Oh, hell yeah! What do we have here? I took the key I'd found and opened the chest to reveal a trove of more gold and silver coins. The chest was small enough to carry, but the gold made it pretty heavy. I considered putting the coins in my backpack, but decided to just take the whole thing. It would be a pain in the ass to carry back, but it wasn't so heavy that it would be impossible. As I came out of the tent and prepared to leave for the surface again, I caught sight of the body on the spit over the dying fire. My stomach churned, but it felt wrong to just leave it there. So I stamped out the fire and took one of the orc's filthy blankets from the tents to wrap the small body in. Then I threw the blanket over the body. I pressed on with the work of giving whoever this was some kind of peaceful end, and I lifted the spit from the wooden stakes that held it up. The small form wasn't heavy, so I laid them down a little ways from the orc's camp. Then I spent some time piling loose rocks over the body, which was hard, sweaty work. But after I had covered the body, I felt a little better. It wasn't ideal, to be sure, but I hoped the gesture would give whoever this person had been some peace, if there was such a thing as an afterlife. After I was done, I gathered up my things and the small chest of coins and started to head back north where I'd come from. When I reached the lake, I stopped to wash my hands and myself as best as I could, since I was covered in blood from the orc I'd shot at point-blank range. Once I was relatively clean, I sat down to drink from my canteen, and I knew I should try to eat something for the energy, but after what I'd just seen, I wasn't very hungry. The knowledge that the orc bandits wouldn't hurt anyone else lifted my spirits, though. And all the gold coins didn't hurt either. I made my way back through the wilderness of the gloom, and its natural beauty slowly washed away the terrible scene at the orc encampment. In the mushroom forest, I caught sight of a group of small, wild pigs that glowed slightly as they rooted amongst the glowing stalks of the tall mushrooms. I supposed a steady diet of the mushrooms had given them the same bioluminescence, and I stopped long enough to make a couple of sketches of the passive creatures. They had stripes and spots that gave them a natural camouflage, and the little piglets were actually kind of cute. After I'd gotten a couple of sketches, I moved on, backing through the twisting forest and the tunnels beyond. Then I looked at my phone and saw it was a little after 7 in the morning. Ipseth would be worried, since I'd promised to be back before sunrise, so I quickly made my way back to the surface. As I came out of the entrance in my backyard, I left my loot and gear in the bushes and peered out between the branches of the lilacs to see if the coast was clear. Sure enough, there was Mrs. Whitmire, looking over the fence and at the back of my house, where I could hear music playing. Fuck me. I debated on waiting until the old woman got bored with her spying, but then I thought better of it. For all I knew, this could be how the blue-haired lady spent her entire day. I put my pistol and its holster into my backpack. Then I rubbed some dirt on my hands, picked up some of the fallen branches in the bushes to make it look like I had gotten an early start on some yard work, and stepped out of the bushes. Oh, hey, Mrs. Whitmire, I said loudly as I exited the lilacs. The old woman jumped and almost fell off whatever it was she was perched on to look over the fence with a small shriek.
Eddie!
The blue-haired woman said as she recovered from her fright.
You really shouldn't sneak up like that. You about stopped my heart. I didn't take you for an early riser. Thought you must work nights.
That was rich. Me sneaking up on her when she was the one spying on me. But I let it pass. I wanted to get a head start before the day got away from me. I grinned. I knew she would be itching to ask when I'd come out into the yard, but then she'd have to admit how long she'd been standing there, staring at my house, so she couldn't.
I didn't realize you had a girlfriend,
Mrs. Whitmire said to change the subject.
I only saw you moving in, so I was surprised to hear a woman's voice at all hours of the night.
We haven't been together long, I said, since I knew the idea of me living with a woman I'd just met would bother the old broad. But she's a real sweet gal, kinda shy and quiet. I was having fun at the older woman's expense, and knew it, but from every interaction I'd had with Mrs. Whitmire, and the things Jenny Miller said, I figured she had it coming, so I didn't feel bad at all.
Oh,
the blue-haired woman said, and she was clearly scandalized from how wide her eyes got, but she tried to hide it with a neighborly smile.
Well, that's nice. Back in my day, we didn't cohabitate until after marriage, but I guess that's all changed now. As long as she's a nice girl and you're happy.
Oh, she is, I said. And I went up to the fence since I was unable to help myself. She's one of those cosplayers. She tattooed her skin all blue and wears those cute little elf ears all the time. Drives me crazy, but in a good way. She said she eventually wants to get one of those body modification surgeries so she can have pointed ears all the time. Great gal. I delivered the speech with a dreamy air of a man who'd just fallen in love, and I watched the slow dawn of horror on the prudish woman's face as I spoke.
Oh, my!
Mrs. Whitmire choked.
You kids these days get up to the strangest things. Well, I should go. I think I left the kettle on.
Have a good day, Mrs. Whitmire, I called out as she disappeared into her house. Once she was gone, I had to stifle a laugh so she wouldn't hear me, but the whole thing killed two birds with one stone. I'd gotten rid of the old woman so I could bring the chest of coins and my guns back into the house, and I knew she'd leap at the first chance to gossip about me and my crazy girlfriend to the other neighbors, so that would save me the trouble of having to explain Ibseth to the whole neighborhood. As I went back into the bushes to get my stuff, I wondered if Ibseth really was my girlfriend. Lord knew she was attractive, and I liked her a lot. Not to mention the elven woman had kissed me last night before I'd left. The first time we'd met, she'd said she was a virgin, and her sheltered life in the gloom had definitely made her a little backwards. I figured I shouldn't read too much into the kiss for now, and just see where things went from here. As I stepped through the back door and closed it behind me, there was a flurry of movement, and suddenly Ibseth threw her arms around me.
Eddie!
The elven woman squealed happily.
I was worried when the sun came up you were not back yet.
I'm okay, I grinned, as I tried not to drop the heavy chest in my arms. Just got a little held up.
Show me how to make the coffee, and then you can tell me all about your adventure.
The blue-skinned woman said as she released her grip around me. I showed Ibseth where the water and the coffee grounds both were, and how to measure out the amount she wanted, and then we sat down on the couch together. I told her about my encounter with the brownies, and showed her the button their leader had given me, then about the beautiful water and the strange mushroom forest, which made her smile. But when I told her about the orcs, and how they'd been roasting someone on a spit over a fire, her little heart-shaped face blanched.
It was probably a gnome farmer.
The elven woman sighed.
There are a lot of farms on the edge of the populated places in the gloom. They must have grown root vegetables or some other crop that is not highly prized, to be unguarded and vulnerable to bandits like that.
After I killed off the orcs, I said, I laid the victims to rest under some stones.
That was also sweet of you,
she said, as she gave me a sweet smile.
But you are okay. The orcs didn't hurt you?
I did fuck up a bit. One flanked me, and I couldn't shoot him before he knocked me down. I lifted my shirt to show the white-haired woman my bruises, and as I looked down, I saw my chest and ribs were black and blue where the orc had pummeled me.
Oh, Eddie!
Ibseth breathed as she gently touched my chest.
Does it hurt badly?
Taking a deep breath isn't fun, I laughed. But I'll live, and I'll be more careful next time.
Did you find what you were looking for?
The blue-skinned woman asked, as she looked back up at me with her violet eyes. I did find this. I got up from the couch and grabbed the chest from where I'd laid it down on the floor before I made the coffee. And then I brought it over to the couch and opened it with a small iron key. When I opened the lid, Ibseth gasped at the sight of all the gold and silver inside.
By the gods,
she murmured. Yeah, I replied. It's a small fortune.
The orc bandits must have robbed 100 farmers to get all this,
Ibseth said quietly.
It is good that you killed them. They were wicked, and the fact that Ursinger and the other chiefs had let them go for so long without punishing them is appalling.
I thought for a moment about telling the elven woman about what I had heard the orc say about Ursinger looking for her and offering a reward, but I felt it would only worry her. Besides, the beautiful elven woman was safe up here on the surface with me, and I planned for her to stay that way. No one has to worry about those orcs anymore, I said, as I closed the lid of the chest. I made sure of that.
You are a good man, Eddie,
Ibseth said, as she looked up at me through her lashes.
I am lucky you found me. I never want to go back. Now that I have seen what life can be like with someone kind, like you.
The elven woman looked deeply into my eyes, and I began to lean forward to kiss her sweet lips again. But then my phone dinged with a text notification. Damn it, I cursed under my breath. Let me see who it is. I pulled out my phone and saw it was from a number I didn't recognize.
This is Travis Meyer. I wanted to let you know the sale of your item went through. Please, call me at your earliest convenience so we can discuss the matter.
I have to make a phone call real quick, I said to the blue-skinned woman apologetically. I stood and dialed the number Jay had given me, and then I waited as the line rang through.
You've reached the offices of Travis Meyer, CPA.
A familiar female voice said.
This is Alice. How may I help you?
Hi, Alice, I replied. This is Eddie Hill. I just got a message from Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Meyer's expecting your call.
The Midwestern woman replied sweetly.
Hold, please.
I held the line and listened to the soft rock music piping through the phone with a bubble of excitement building in my chest.
Mr. Hill, Meyer's voice said in the receiver. I have some good news for you.